Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my
home. We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle. I'm going to play football.
I'm coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Ladies and gentlemen of Steeler Nation, welcome back to another episode of the BehindTheSteelCurtain.com flagship podcast. The standard is the standard. As always, I'm editor of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, Jeff Hartman. And, you know, the Steelers have some injuries right now, and people are stepping up. They're getting on. B.J. Finney is a perfect example in week four, stepping up big time. Lance Williams is not able to be with us tonight, has some personal stuff that he has to attend to. And so we go into the bullpen, and we pull out an old favorite of ours that's a former contributor to BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, Christopher Carter. What's going on, Chris?
I'm all right, Jeff. Glad to be back on the show. Man, it's been a while. What, like a month?
It has been a while. So why don't we go, because a lot of people listen to the show, and a lot of people know who you are from past experience with the website and with the podcast. So why don't you fill everyone in, if they don't know, with what you're doing now?
Well, actually, I got picked up. I switched over to DK Pittsburgh Sports, run by Dejan Kovacevic, and it's been a great experience so far. If you haven't heard of it, DK Pittsburgh Sports is basically a website that covers all sorts of Pittsburgh sports, whether it's the Steelers, the Penguins, or the Pirates. They also cover Pitt sports, and not just football, but basketball and anything else that they're getting big in. They got Penn State coverage, great Penn State coverage. They have some great West Virginia coverage in there, and they're very in depth. We have a great team over there. It's a lot of fun. I actually got to meet the entire staff, and we're bringing in new talent every day. We just brought in Mark Caboli from the Trib. He's a beat writer with Dustin Dopierak, and both of those guys do a lot of great work. And there's a big support staff over there. It's been great. The insight from the rest of the team has been fantastic. It's helped me sort of improve my writing and my experience as far as, you know, how I can help readers see more of what you'd want to see that you probably would miss if you were just being a casual fan or just, you know, haven't been paying as close of attention. And it's a great experience. Dejan knows what he's doing over there. He's a great leader. And I got to say, it's been very rewarding. So it's been a lot of fun. If you haven't checked it out, give it a shot. It's a subscription-based website, but I guarantee you, once you subscribe, you will be happy that you did, because what I do for them, I break down the X's and O's, much like I did for BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. With the film room, we have our Carter's Classroom segment, which about 3 to 4 times a week, I break down what the Steelers did right, what the Steelers did wrong, and what their next opponent's probably going to do to them. So, it's a lot of fun. We have some great tech support over there that help us make the GIFs look a lot better. Taylor, our tech person, would probably chew me out for calling it GIFs and not GIFs, because I found that out when I moved over there. But it's great. So if you get a chance, give it a look. See, Behind the Steel Curtain is still great. I still check it out in my spare time, but it's definitely. And we're even friends. If you ask Jeff and DK, they talk now and then. It's pretty cool, and I'm glad to be on their team.
Yes, absolutely. And I will say that, as someone that runs their own website, I don't read many other websites, but DK's website is one that I read. It is not as much money as you think. I want to say you can get a 3-year subscription. That's 3 years for like $54. It might have gone up a little bit, but still, that's really piddling when you look at the quality of content. So,
oh yeah.
All right, enough of that talk. Let's talk about some Steelers football, Chris. And I want to get your feelings because honestly, I haven't had a chance to talk with you about the Steelers season. Why don't we go ahead and before we talk about the Chiefs game for specifically, I'd love to get your input. The first quarter of the season is now behind us. I predicted a 3-1 record. I didn't have them losing to the Chiefs, but I did predict a 3-1 record out of the first quarter. What were your takeaways from the first quarter, the first four games? Did you think they would go 3-1? Pluses, minuses, all that good stuff. What's your quick synopsis?
You're very excited to see how well the team played in the absence of Le'Veon Bell, with D'Angelo Williams really stepping up. Of course, everyone's disappointed in the Eagles' performance, but at the same time, my interpretation of that was that if you look back to many of the Steelers' seasons when they've won Super Bowls, and this is not to excuse that loss in any way, but you can find those kind of really breakdown losses that make you scratch your head and wonder, is this team still a Super Bowl caliber team? Even back in the 70s, after they won the 74 Super Bowl in 1975, they came out and they laid an egg against the Buffalo Bills, and and O.J. Simpson ran for over 200 yards in the steel curtain defense. And, you know, it's just one of those things, like, you know, it just, those things happen in football. No one can be perfect. But at the same time, you know, you look at those breakdowns, they weren't unfixable breakdowns. They weren't problems that can't be fixed. It wasn't like the Philadelphia Eagles made it so that there was no possible way for the Steelers to ever win if they ever played them. It was a sense of the Steelers missed their shots and they were available. The game against Washington, they came out slow, but they played really well. I thought that Keith Butler had the right scheme to take on Kirk Cousins. We talked about that on DK Pittsburgh Sports, because Cousins, all last year, if you look back throughout his passes, he threw about 30 touchdowns, including his playoff performance, and only 3 of those touchdowns came against zone coverage. And that's what the Steelers employed all night, and they limited him to 1 touchdown, and they ended up winning the game. With the Bengals, they did a great job confusing Andy Dalton just enough to slow him down. Offense was a little sluggish, but they got the job done. And the Eagles, I think you just saw the sort of what happens when you sit back too much, because they kept playing very preventive zones and not necessarily aggressive zones, and with blitz schemes ahead of them. And it came back to bite them, because Carson Wentz was able to see that, and he was able to pick them apart, and he was able to be comfortable. So when you do that, you give them more opportunities. And then you saw a sort of a resurrection of that style of defense that we've come to know and love as Steelers fans, where you put the pressure on them to make the decisions and be smart and have to make plays. And you just saw the Chiefs weren't able to really get that together until the second half. And what made that even more beautiful was that the offense did get it together. I expected them to be 4-0, but, you know, I'm a homer. I don't ever predict them to lose. But at the same time, 3-1 is right about the pace that you want to be through, you know, 4 games. Of course, you want to be 4-0, but, you know, you ask any coach in the league if they would take 3-1 before knowing, and I'm pretty sure they would tell you they would take it, especially with the rash of injuries this team has had to deal with. I mean, they lost – They had 8 starters out at one point in the game against the Eagles. You know, Le'Veon Bell's been out for suspension. Martavis Bryant's missing. Ramon Foster's hurt. Ryan Shazier's hurt. Eli Rogers got hurt, and he was stepping up. You know, there's a lot of question marks on the injury list, but guys keep filling in. I mean, this B.J. Finney guy, he played great. And we'll get into that in a bit, I'm sure. But, I'm excited about what I saw. You know, the scary part is the Eagles game. You know, you got to hope that whatever that was just an aberration, and they can make sure that doesn't happen again. But I mean, I really fear no team except the Steelers. It's the only team. And Mike Mitchell said it after the game on WPXI. He said, last week was not, and no one can beat us. We beat ourselves. And I think that's the mentality this team needs to have, because I think when this team plays the best that it can, I don't think they can be beat. But that's just me.
That's a really good point, and I would probably agree with you with that. The thing with me, and I know a lot of people would disagree with me, ever since that week 3, just, well, it's essentially like they didn't even show up. ever since that week three game, I felt like that was kind of like a slice of humble pie for the Steelers. They might have been reading the press clippings. They might have been online checking and seeing the power rankings. These players check this stuff. I don't think that they live in a cocoon and they don't check anything. I'm not sure they're looking and see where they rank and all that stuff. Hey, it's easy to do. You know, you're going against Philadelphia. You're going against a rookie quarterback. You're thinking, okay, this game's not going to be that difficult. And then you get lambasted by the Eagles and Carson Wentz. So I think it's kind of a reality check. They went back to the drawing board, especially defensively, and we really saw them get after Alex Smith in week four against the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's move on now to that game. Thoughts on the game, Chris? Obviously, we know what went well. Cam Hayward was a man amongst boys. The bull rush was working. He was getting good interior pass rush pressure. Stephon Tuitt, no slouch either, forced two fumbles in the game. Really monster game from those two guys. But what stood out to you, and I know you watch a lot of film, especially now with your new gig, what stood out to you that maybe someone might not have noticed, a player that played extremely well, that maybe didn't see the stats like Vince Williams, 16 overall tackles or something like that? Who stood out to you when you watched the film?
So, you know, I would say B.J. Finney, but I think that's kind of obvious because people have started to talk about that a lot, considering, you know, he was a backup filling in Ramon Foster. But, I mean, I want to reinforce that by saying I don't think that people understand he didn't just fill in. He was the left guard. Like, you know, he played like a starter that day because when Cody Wallace replaces Marquise Pouncey on the offensive line, they work around him. Like, you know, he does an okay job. He's adequate, but he's not a guy that they can scheme around and say, okay, we're going to put him here. We're going to put him in this hole, and we're going to attack his gap, and we're going to use that to our advantage. They don't do that with Cody Wallace because that's not the kind of player that he is. B.J. Finney, however, I mean, they were using him to pull and lead block, set traps. There were several times they would attack where he was at, and that's something that you really didn't see much with Cody Wallace because he wasn't that good. And at first, I was like, why are we getting rid of Cody Wallace? You know, from being our number one interior guy because he can play center and guard. But B.J. Finney, I mean, he's been even in the Eagles game. You know, while the whole team kind of sucked, I didn't really notice him making huge mistakes. And that's with the team being under siege. And you saw it again, and the Chiefs defensive front is no joke, man. So B.J. Finney was my offensive guy. If I had to pick a defensive guy, you know, Vince Williams is easy. Hayward and Tuitt are easy. But check this out. Go back and look at Javon Hargrave. Or Javon Hargrave, I found out it's Javon and not Javon. But there were several times that he did a really good job working in the gaps. And there was a really good if you remember in the third quarter, I believe it was, the Chiefs were driving into the red zone, and Alex Smith threw a pass that almost got picked off by Ross Cockrell. There was a really good twist from Hargrave. He just shot right through the A-gap, and Alex Smith just saw him and said, holy crap, and had to get rid of the ball. And if he had thrown the ball just a little bit higher, it would have been a pick six probably if Cockrell could have caught the ball. But Javon Hargrave, that guy is really improving. And you know me, I'm a lineman guy. I love the big boys. You know, the Buffaloes, they get the job done in the trenches, and that's the attention I get. But you look at those guys, and there's a lot of hope because Ramon Foster, we did sign him to a 3-year deal, so we know we have him for a while, but you do need backups. And especially with Marcus Gilbert being hurt, you know, there may be some things that need to be flipped around. They said Marquise Pouncey's working out at tackle. And on the defensive front, eventually, you know, what happens, it's been the question we asked for over a year now, what happens when Tuitt and Hayward get hurt? Because they play so many snaps for the ball. And Javon Hargrave is really looking like he could be a guy that could create pressure and cause problems for offensive line as a defensive tackle / defensive end, which is really what Tuitt and Hayward do. They line them up in the zero and the one and the two and the three. They line them up all over the place at times. You know, not as much in the inside gaps, but I think that, you know, when they go into passing situations and they have to, they're their guys because they know that they can create pressure and they can plug up gaps. So those are my two guys. Did you have any guys in particular that you were impressed with?
Defensively, there's one player who's been playing well all season. It even goes back into last season as well, and that's Mike Mitchell. People don't really give the guy the credit that he deserves, and I think a lot of it stems from his first year here. Big name free agent, big money, hurts himself in training camp, plays injured the entire season, gets into that spat with fans on social media, And I think that gave people a sour taste in their mouth about him, but he has been playing some really good football. And you don't always notice him, but sometimes his coverage and him playing a really good center field for the Steelers prevents passes coming his way. It's really fun to watch. If you have the ability to watch the All-22, which shows all 22 players in the football field, you just see Mike Mitchell making some really good, really smart plays, and he's kind of that captain of the, he's the captain of that secondary. And don't think that Jordan Dangerfield's success last week in week four didn't have a lot to do with who was playing next to him, and that's Mike Mitchell. So I would say Mike Mitchell was, for me, in week four and the rest of the season, to be honest with you, offensively, I had been impressed with Jesse James. He had a great catch for a touchdown in the red zone. He's kind of become what everyone thought he was going to be in terms of a good red zone target. He's going to be that move the chains guy. I mean, to be honest with you, from an offensive receiving standpoint, he seems every bit as good as what Heath Miller was in 2015. That's the aging Heath Miller. That's not the 2005 Heath Miller. But I think he has a lot to do. He has a lot of work to do blocking, catching the football, being on a good trusted relationship with Ben Roethlisberger is very important. He has that. I was impressed with him, Jesse James and Mike Mitchell. That's who I was giving. I was giving game balls to, I guess. And when I say game balls, obviously the five touchdowns of Ben Roethlisberger, AFC Player of the Week, stuff like that. I'm talking about players that might not get recognized as much. So, I mean, if you want to comment on those guys, you can. But I just think Jesse James and Mike Mitchell have been very quiet, but are having really good seasons.
No, I agree. Jesse James has been. It's funny, when I came to this season, I was really. I remember us talking about this several times. I was very excited that the Steelers went and got Ladarius Green because he's a hell of an athlete, and if you can get the ball in his hands, he will be a problem. Well, we haven't seen one lick of Ladarius Green all season, and that was thinking to be a problem. Like, you know, that what people were saying. Oh man, you know, we're gonna have nobody to tight end position because we didn't go get some. Way to go, Steelers. You picked an injury guy, and then all of a sudden, Xavier Grimble and Jesse James are both, they're doing really well. They've caught passes. They seem to run their routes really well. I mean, that touchdown that Grimble had against the Bengals, that was really good stuff. And right about Jesse James, that one-handed reception, man, that was so clutch. That was a second down, and Ben immediately, yeah, Ben looked off the safety and then went right to James. It was so, like, you know, that's one of those things that they could have run that in the pitch black of night and without any light, and they might have been able to hit that pass because it was just so automatic. I'm very excited about Jesse James. And Mike Mitchell, he's my dude, man. Like, I said that from the beginning, you know, because both you and I kept saying that his whole first year when we were working with us. And I remember because everyone was saying, oh, he's horrible. And he was pretty bad his first year. He looked out of place. He wasn't making plays. He didn't look comfortable. But we said that's what happens if you look back at Ryan Clark, James Ferrier, Troy Polamalu, the guys of the last generation of a great Steelers defense, that when they come in on the team, it takes a minute to learn this defense and to be comfortable and to start making plays. And you really started to see that last year when he was picking passes off and knocking people out and being all over the place and really coordinating things. He's a huge part of that defense. I was definitely excited to see him. And I do think this year he's been very good. Get on him. Like, people, I've had to deal with people in our comment section sometimes at DK Pittsburgh Sports with, you know, saying, he's always too late to the ball and this, that. That's not Mike Mitchell being too late. His scheme is not to – he's not Ed Reed. He's not Troy Polamalu. If you think he's Troy Polamalu, you're crazy. You know, he's going to be a guy that they have in there. He lays down the law on receivers when he has the chance to be an enforcer over the middle. That's one big thing that he has, and that's what you need out of safety. Like, that's why they had with Ryan Clark. But he also is pretty good in pass coverage when he's assigned to someone, and he plays well and he keeps his responsibilities. So definitely excited about Mitchell, and I'm really excited about Jesse James. I mean, he was a fifth-round pick, and right now he's working like a starting tight end for us in an offense that – teams already have way too much to worry about in Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell, the emergence of Sammy Coates, Ben Roethlisberger in general, just reading you as a defense. And now you got to worry about this guy, Jesse James, and possibly this Xavier Grimble guy, and if Wheaton can get it back together. And there's still D'Angelo Williams when Bell's off the field. I mean, come on, that's way too many problems to figure out. for talented players. So look for Jesse James, Grimble, and Sammy Coates, in my opinion, to get a lot more one-on-one opportunities.
Yeah, it's certainly looking like it. And so it was a great game to kind of put a bow on the Week 4 win over the Chiefs. It was a great game. It was one of the few games that I'm sure you were like me, that you could kind of relax a little bit and maybe just watch the football game. There were times where I was looking at the clock saying, my goodness, this game isn't over yet. But there was a lot of good stuff to come out of there. Now, one of the bad things that came out of that game were just a lot of injuries. And this is going to lead us into our conversation about the New York Jets coming in Week 5. So there were some good things. Okay, there were some good parts of the injury report. Now that we have Wednesday's workout already through with the Steelers, they listed their injury report already for the upcoming week, their first injury report. Let me read this off for you from the Steelers' standpoint. The players that did not practice, Marcus Gilbert with his ankle, Senquez Golson, obviously, with a foot. Ryan Harris with that hematoma on his shin, which people are saying is pretty bad, and we're going to talk about that and how that could impact the Steelers' offense here in a second. Jarvis Jones' ankle, he does not practice. That's worth noting. Eli Rogers' toe does not play. He's already been ruled out. Shazier's knee, still not practicing. Cody Wallace's knee, already been ruled out. And then D'Angelo Williams missed practice, but it's not injury-related. In other words, he got a Veterans Day off. Limited participation. Justin Gilbert, now newly acquired from the Cleveland Browns prior to the season, left practice with a knee injury. Jeremy Fowler of ESPN said he saw him leaving on his own power. Looked okay. They're going to engage his participation as he goes this week, so he might miss. Robert Golden returned to practice on a limited basis, and then full participation. This is the good news, folks. Anthony Chiquilla's knee was not that bad that kept him out of practice. He was a full participant. Ramon Foster, left guard, chest injury, missed last week. He was a full participant. Darius Hayward-Bey's shoulder didn't stop him from participating. And Roosevelt Nix, really good news, full participant. He could be back to help out on special teams and as that fullback slash H-back role if he can get through a full week of full practice. A lot of names there. I know that's tough to digest. But one name that wasn't on the list because he played last week and he wasn't injured, so they don't have to list him, and that's Sean Davis. Sean Davis practiced. He was a full participant, wasn't listed on the injury report, meaning he has a full go. Played last week, should be good to go this week. That's a lot to take in, Chris. Let's start off. You focus on the defensive guys. I look at names like Jarvis Jones with the outside linebacker position. Anthony Chiquilla, thankfully, will be back. Justin Gilbert, Sean Davis, Robert Golden. What are your thoughts on the injury situation and how it could impact the Steelers roster from a defensive standpoint?
I don't care what people say about, you know, the standard meets the standard and how many, and you know, guys just got to step up and play and rise to the occasion, and you know, you got to fill up. Eventually, that's going to come back to bite you when all your starters keep getting hurt, and you have to keep plugging and playing guys because no team, a team is made up of a nucleus, and when those nucleus guys are taken out of consideration, that's a problem, and that's going to come back to hurt you, and it's funny, you know, people say that about the Steelers, like, oh, you don't have any excuses. But I mean, with the Patriots, I mean, the reason that everyone says Bill Belichick's a genius this season, again, on top of what he's, it's because of all the missing players that he's had and how they've had to plug and play. And you saw that really impact him as they got shut out by the Buffalo Bills. And I mean, but everyone's like, oh, well, you know, he had his third string quarterback and he was, well, guess what? The Steelers were down to a fourth string quarterback last year. It's one of those things when you look on the defensive side of the ball that you saw that really take an impact on, in the second half of the Philadelphia game because I remember reading from, I think it was Vince Williams. He said, that when eventually they had to basically stick into like two or three base set defenses because they had so many guys in there that weren't familiar with playing as starters. And it was just having a huge impact on their ability to be able to switch audibles. Cause so many, the Steelers defense makes so many adjustments at the line of scrimmage and things like that, but you can't do that with guys that aren't playing every week and aren't getting that experience. So I really hope that Jarvis Jones is healthy. And it's funny that people, you know, because we always dog Jarvis Jones. He is a first-round bust of a pick right now. But at the same time, he is an important role player in this defense. He knows how to He knows when to jump into coverage. He knows how to he knows how to at least maintain an edge now, which is something that I think that this team was missing for years. So you know, I think it's important for that. You hope that Ryan Chazier can get back healthy, but at the same time, as long as Lawrence Timmons is still in there, I think that the defense, the linebackers will be fine as far as communication-wise, because one thing you saw also when Timmons went out and Chazier went out against the Eagles, you saw Vince Williams and LJ Fort, and you just saw the lack of just how many switches were going on at the line of scrimmage, because I think Williams can do that with a Timmons or with a Chazier in there, but not with LJ Fort, because Fort's just not as comfortable in this defense. He's been a practice squad player for years, and now he's on the roster and as a backup, and the backup to the backup. So you know, I'm looking at the defensive side of the ball. You know, I'm glad that none of our corners are hurt, because we do need William Gay, Ross Cockrell, and Artie Burns out there. I really like Artie Burns so far. You know, he's not perfect, but at the same time, he isn't, you know, he hasn't been a liability that much out there. He's had some really nice plays on the ball. Ross Cockrell, while he's missed, you know, a few interception opportunities, that gets frustrating. I think he's done a good job. You hope Sean Davis can be healthy, because he seems like a good plug and play player right now, that you can put him in the slot, you can put him at safety if you need to. But if Robert Golden returns, I think that's going to be a huge boost, because then if Sean Davis is healthy, they can bump him, put him back in the slot, and they'll be comfortable with that. Though I got to say, I wasn't too dissatisfied with the play of Jordan Dangerfield. I don't know about you, Jeff, but Jordan Dangerfield, yes, he did make some mistakes in the pass coverage game. It wasn't exposed because of the Steelers' pass rush. But, I mean, he was making some solid tackles. He was flying up to the line of scrimmage when they needed him. And he even had a nice little blitz that led to that contributed to that Jarvis Jones interception. He came right into Alex Smith's face, who overreacted, and the screen was blown up. And Hayward tipped the ball, and Jones picked it off. So I think if Robert Golden comes back, it'll be a boost to the defense, simply because I think he has a very strong hold on where they need to be and what they need to do. But at the same time, I think that they've done a really good job with the plug and play, but eventually it's going to come back to bite you. This week, you got the Jets, a struggling offense. I think that they can be fine. But I do hope that Anthony Chiglio is healthy if Jarvis Jones is not, because eventually they're really becoming thin outside linebacker. And although I do like seeing some silverback out there in the form of James Harrison, it's eventually they need some help out there.
Yeah, and when I look at the injury report, especially on defense, you just look at it and you say, okay, what's going to happen if these players don't play? So if you look at the snap totals from week four, you saw that Jarvis Jones, Arthur Motes, and James Harrison, Arthur Motes actually played the most snaps of the three, but they really split the time in three ways. Now, Arthur Motes can play both sides, but he's been primarily playing the left. Jarvis Jones has been bouncing back and forth from time to time, and then James Harrison clearly is on the right side. If Jarvis Jones can't play, at least Jarvis Jones, like you said, was setting the edge. He's really good in run support, and he is pretty good in dropping into coverage. So just because Jarvis Jones doesn't get sacks, and I tell people this all the time, doesn't mean that he is a complete bust. He's just not what they expected him to be, but he is still able to contribute. So if he's out and Anthony Chiglio is in, can Chiglio contribute those that many snaps, that many reps? That's tough. That's a question. I wouldn't rush Robert Golden or Ryan Chazier back if Ryan Chazier is even a question mark, because those are injuries that can linger the entire season. A hamstring, the sprained knee, let it heal, and then, you know, like you said, Vince Williams can step in, and then Jordan Dangerfield looked really good last week. But then you have, okay, Sean Davis. Is he really healthy? Is he healthy enough to actually contribute? Last week he played in one snap outside of special teams, I believe, and so you have to figure that he could be that guy that comes in, because if Justin Gilbert can't play because of his knee injury, if you notice in that really specific sub-package they had when Dangerfield came off the field, it was Gilbert that went on to try to cover Travis Kelce. He did a pretty good job with it, too. That could be Sean Davis if he's healthy, if Gilbert can't go. So it's going to be worth watching to see how this injury report changes and adapts throughout the week. But defensively, they're going to have to continue to juggle things and hopefully deal with, in my opinion, a pretty substandard Jets offense. So this is the time where Lance usually gives us the keys to victory. If you could think of man, three things. So just even just off the top of your head, that the Steelers defensively need to do against the Jets offense, what would you be putting down on those three keys?
Well, first and foremost, limit Matt Forte. He is still a good running back in the NFL. He can be. He's probably this offense's best playmaker next to Brandon Marshall. And with the problems that Ryan Fitzpatrick has been having lately, I'm pretty sure that they're thinking, okay, we gotta help, you know, take some of the stress off of Fitzpatrick's back. I think he threw two picks again this week, or three picks this week, and six picks the week before. You know, the Jets, and they just signed him to what, a $14 million deal for this year. He kind of held them hostage for a bit, and it was smart on him. He did that. But this offense, you shut down Forte, win those early downs, and then you're going to get to a place where you force Ryan Fitzpatrick to pass and make decisions, and that's where it's going to come into play. Number two, do not do what they did against the Eagles and the Bengals and the Redskins. Blitz this guy. Bring in the heat. Make him have to read you. Yes, he has a Harvard education, but guess what? That's going to be going out the window as soon as they start blitzing five or six guys, and he has to decide and make it different looks, you know, on second and third down situations. And then when you get him into a situation where he has to just take the under route because you're so far back in your cover four, your cover three looks, then you can drop back and just rush three or four guys and force him to just throw that under route, make the tackle, and, you know, get your punt on. But, you know, bringing those guys, that's going to be huge. Secondly, you know, for my third point, I guess, key of the game, don't have the gaps in the secondary, because I just did a film room, like a Carter's Classroom segment for DK Pitts, and one thing that I talked about was in the defense looked great on Sunday night. They looked very, very good. But there were a lot of problems in the secondary that were masked by a good pass rush. But Cameron Hayward saved the day more times than we think. There were times when he created pressure in the pocket by just pushing his man so far into the backfield that Alex Smith had to change his launch spot, and that messed up the timing on their plays. And this wasn't schematics most of the time. This was just straight up someone blew their coverage. There was one play. In fact, I think it was the sack that Vince Williams had because Hayward chased him out of the pocket. They had two receivers streaking up the left side of the field. One kind of went on like a 10-yard out, and the other one kind of just did a wheel route all the way down. And William Gay was the only person there. And at first he was covering the deep route, then he came up on the out route. If Alex Smith had just another second, he would have thrown a bomb, and it probably would have been a touchdown. And I think that was on the fault of Jordan Dangerfield. He bit on a crossing route. But those are the things you saw. I saw a few too many of those. And it's those type of plays, when you get up against a Tom Brady later in the season, those are the plays that can really come back to hurt you. And not that Ryan Fitzpatrick is a Tom Brady, but you don't want to give anyone those kind of opportunities. So if they shut down the run on first down and keep Matt Forte out of this game, they're gonna get into a good situation. If they turn up the heat on the second and third downs, Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to be forced to make reads, and then he might have to take risks as far as is he sure of what he's seeing? Is he 100%, you know, certain that that's the look that the Steelers are giving him, and they're not faking him out? And then once he processes whether he's correct or not, you know, will the pass rush be able to get there? And then that's when you get into playing some good old fashioned Blitzburg football. You know, if he can make the throw, good for him. But if he can't, guess what? You're going to either get hurt or you're going to throw an interception. And then, of course, like I said, on the backside, just play good in the secondary. Do not bite on mistakes. Make sure you keep your responsibilities. And part of that, it was Jordan Dangerfield's first NFL start. Of course, you know, mistakes are going to happen. But that's why, you know, week to week, you look at the film so that you can improve and you know, zip those up tight and make sure that those things aren't there. And you saw that a lot last year. You know, that first week against the Patriots, the defense looked atrocious. They were getting picked apart. Even though they were creating pressure and shutting down the run, the secondary looked out of sorts. But by mid to late season, that secondary was looking really together. So those are my keys. I think that it's going to be a really good game for the defense. What are your keys for the offense?
Yeah, offensively, let's talk about the injuries on offense, because there are injuries on offense that are going to play a big role, in my opinion, in how they approach this defense, because this Jets defense is their defensive front, in my opinion, might be, it's definitely top five. It might be even top three in terms of just sheer skill. And these guys, they do it all by themselves, and it allows them to really play creative, use creative schemes in the back end. And let's talk about some of those. Ryan Harris, the shin, the hematome, Marcus Covid-Dangle. Ramon Foster coming back is big. But like I told a couple of our contributors today, we were talking online, and I said, Foster coming back is nice. I really wish, though, that Brian Harris or Marcus Gilbert improved enough to play, because the tackle position is the really killed me. I really wish that Gerald Hawkins wasn't put on injured reserve, so they might be able to have him. But nonetheless, you can't undo that at this point. I think that right now I wouldn't think that either Gilbert or Harris plays. So that would mean that they have some options here. If we're assuming that Ramon Foster will be back at left guard, and it looks like they're going to try Chris Hubbard at right tackle. Now, for those that watched the preseason, Chris Hubbard played tackle, and if you didn't watch, it wasn't pretty. Okay, and that's, again, preseason skill. It wasn't pretty at all. And so if you're going to play Hubbard and see what you have with him, you're going to have to give him help. So you're going to have the running backs chipping a lot. You're going to have a tight end covering him up a lot. And that's going to certainly alter the personnel groupings that you use. You won't see the Steelers go into the four wide receiver sets very often based on the fact that they're going to need a tight end or someone over top of the right tackle. But at the same time, you can't always allow them to dictate what you do. And so I think the keys, looking at the offense and what's going to what could happen, I think the number one thing for, and I've always believed this, the best way to stop a good pass rush is to run the football. If you can run the football and create manageable down and distances for third downs, we're talking third and five and less, you are a threat to run or pass. And if Le'Veon Bell can continue to do what he did last week, I have no doubt that they'll be able to do that. The interior runs will be there, especially if Foster and or DJ Finney, like you said earlier, proved it that he could do it. You're looking at it and saying the interior runs should be there. You might not run off right tackle as much. You might be pulling going to the left side a lot. It's pretty normal anyways with the pulling right guard of David DeCastro and Pouncey. You have to run the football. You have to try to stay balanced. If Roethlisberger decides he's just going to chuck it 40, 45 times, that could be a recipe for disaster with this team. Now, Revis has not practiced. He didn't practice Wednesday. He's dealing with a hamstring pull. They're not sure if he's going to play or not. That's going to be a big factor in this game. Revis, even though he got abused in week one against the Bengals, he hasn't been the same all season. He's still a really good cornerback. So you have to be aware of where he is on the field. You have to be aware of the coverage schemes they're running. If he has a hamstring injury, they might not be putting him on an island as much. So the first key is to run the football. The second key is to spread the wealth. Ben Roethlisberger did this really, really well in week four against the Kansas City Chiefs. He didn't sit there and stare at Antonio Brown. I think Brown finished with six catches, maybe. Correct me if I'm wrong, four or six catches. Yes, if you remember, he had two touchdowns, only 60-some yards. That's not a bad stat line. I know people look at that, and fantasy owners are probably pissed that he didn't have as many receptions and yardage. If the Steelers can do that and not have to use him alone, it's going to make the offense work better. So they have to spread the wealth to Sammy Coates, to Darius Heyward-Bey if he plays, to Marcus Wheaton, who only had one reception. That was a touchdown, not counting the two-point conversion. If they can spread the wealth, it's only going to make it more difficult to defend. So that's my second key. My third key is red zone efficiency. You saw it against the Chiefs. When you get down in the red zone, whether it's from a turnover or whether it's a long drive, when you put touchdowns on the board, it changes the game for the better. Think back to the first quarter of that Chiefs game. So they drive down, they get the Chiefs punt, the Steelers punt it back, the next play is a fumble. If they only get a field goal out of that, the Chiefs are looking at that as a victory. Okay, instead, they score a touchdown, two-point conversion, now they're down eight. So then the next drive, they throw an interception. Steelers turn that into a 15-point lead now. It totally changes the dynamic of the game. And so the red zone offense, which has been a knack on Todd Haley and Ben Roethlisberger for probably the last three seasons, has been surprisingly good this year. They're doing a really good job of, like I said, spreading the ball around. So in my humble opinion, my three keys for success for the offense is, number one, run the football. to stay on time in terms of down and distance. The second key would be to spread the wealth, spread the love around for Roethlisberger in terms of getting the football to other people other than Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown. And lastly, keep the red zone offense red hot, and you will certainly have a good chance of success against this. I think it's a really good Jets defense, or let me rephrase that, a really good Jets front seven. And so, Chris, I want to ask you, before we kind of go into prediction mode here, is there a matchup offensively or defensively that you're really looking forward to watching this week as you look at the Jets, whether it's offensively or defensively, paired up against Pittsburgh?
You know, I told you guys earlier, I'm big on the lines, but I think it's going to be huge watching their defensive front clash with our offensive front. Our offensive line, they sort of stood up to the Eagles in the beginning of the game, but they completely were beaten bad in the second half. And that's something that you don't often see with Marquise Pouncey, David DeCastro, Marcus Gilbert, and company, because those are the three leaders of this offensive line. And, you know, Gilbert might not be playing, but DeCastro and Pouncey may be the best 1-2 punch of any center guard in the league. And when you're going up against a defensive front, one has the former Steeler and their buddy Steve McClendon. He's now a part of their defensive front for the Jets. But you got Leonard Williams and Muhammad Wilkinson. Those guys are both just wrecking balls, and they're causing problems all the time. They sacked the Bengals 6 times in week one. 6 times. It was ridiculous. Watching it, and it wasn't even like they were blitzing. They were just using 4-man front twists, where one guy would take a double team, the other guy would twist into the hole, and they would just attack all game long. My matchup of the game is going to be how the Steelers' offensive line deals with that front. Can they open those holes for Le'Veon Bell? Can they give Ben Roethlisberger the time in the pocket that he needs so he can focus and be ready for this game? Because I don't think anyone said it yet this year, but the trap game is something that everyone has talked about for the Steelers in past years. A team that, you know, looks underwhelming. It's like, oh, you're not so worried about them. And you were talking about maybe that's what kind of the Eagles game was for them, even though the Eagles were 2-0 at the time. I think that the Jets, we've seen it in the past, you know, when they played the Jets when they had Mike Vick. I honestly felt like they were just underprepared, not in the sense that the coaches didn't do it, but it looked like Ben Roethlisberger wasn't on his A game. And, like, he was on his A game, this last game against the Chiefs. But I think there's sometimes that, honestly, Ben may not look to his second and third reads as much because he thinks that he can just beat guys by staring down Antonio Brown. And I don't think that's on Coach Tomlin or Todd Haley, because you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make a drink. And I think it's one of those situations where Ben has to be a leader. He has to be working with his guys. He has to prepare every week. And I hope that that's what he's doing this week, because a lot of how the offensive line deals with these situations is also communicating with Ben Roethlisberger. Hey, we see this blitz coming. Hey, this is coming from here. Get ready. You cover this gap. You cover this gap. We're chipping this guy. We're going to this linebacker. And Bell, this is the hole that you're hitting. You know, those type of communication skills are essential to – I mean, that's really half the skill of being an offensive lineman. It's not just your footwork. It's not just your upper body strength. It's not just being able to get under a player's pads and move them out the hole. It's knowing what the defense is giving you, communicating with 5 guys. That's the thing. It's not just – you're not running a route by yourself. You're not, you know – You're not doing this with 2 other guys. You're communicating with 5 guys, that you guys, sometimes 6 if you include the tight end, that you have to, who you're protecting, who you're hitting, which gaps you're opening up, and that all the play all comes around that. So that's going to be on that matchup for the week. Excuse me. Pouncey, DeCastro and company versus Wilkerson, McClendon, and Williams and the Jets, because that's the toughest part of their team. They've invested a whole lot of first round draft picks into that position, as well as now free agency. And I think if the Steelers win there, they're going to cruise in this game. What's your key matchup?
Honestly, you know this from working with me for several years prior to going to DK Pittsburgh mm-hmm. Sports. I love Le'Veon Bell, okay? And I think that watching him, and we did a couple film breakdowns of him leading up to the game, and even just watching him in the preseason against the Saints in that third game, you forget how good he really is. And so for me, I'm anxious to see what he can do and how dynamic he can be, because honestly, he gained 144 yards on the ground. He added another 30-some in the air, and I still don't think he played his best game against the Chiefs. You could tell that he was rusty. You could tell that he started to get warmed up as the game went on. And now he's got his second game. He's got a game under his belt, a game where he's been hit for four quarters. The knee should not be like in his head as an issue anymore. It's all about Le'Veon Bell in this game. If he can be as dynamic as he was in 2014 as a receiver, and that's something that people are going to forget this, but, okay, so right tackle is an issue, and you talked a lot about the wrecking balls that they have in their front four. The safety valve of Le'Veon Bell will absolutely annihilate them if they don't want to come all out of Ben Roethlisberger. Don't think that Todd Haley is not preparing for that. Think back to 2014, especially against the Ravens. There were a couple plays where he just knows, he has that uncanny knack of knowing when to slip out of pass protection and then find himself right in Ben's crosshairs. It's a quick dump off that turns into sometimes a 20, 30, even a 40-yard gain. Le'Veon Bell is the difference maker. I called him the X Factor last week. He basically could be the X Factor every week as long as he's healthy. In this second game, back from injury and back from suspension.
No, I agree with you, man. Jeff?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, I'm here.
No, sorry. I thought I lost you for a sec. He's definitely an X factor, and you know, I think both you and I were. I just remember in 2014, we were just raving over Le'Veon Bell and how good he was playing, because it was that thing that, you know. Yeah, you're right. If the defense accounted for everything, if they covered Antonio Brown, Marquez Bryant, Marcus Wheaton, Heath Miller, whoever they covered all that, and Le'Veon Bell didn't run a route, guess what? He's flipping out there for 5 yards, and Ben's gonna get it to him. And if you don't tackle him, he's gonna get 20, 30 yards. I think that's a huge part of the offense that was gone. And I talked about that. I'll talk about that something in the morning. If you do want to check out our stuff here at DK Pittsburgh Sports tomorrow, I have an article printing. Publish in the morning about the matchups, that problems that Bell creates in the passing game. I mean, you saw in this game that he would line out at the flanker position, at the split end. He'd line up as the sidecar. He'd come out the backfield. He'd come out as a wide receiver. You could put him anywhere on the field, and he'll find a way to produce. And that's so terrifying for a defense, because think about, you know, the matchup problems that it creates. You saw. They had a rookie corner out there trying to tackle him, and he was just getting bulldozed by Bell. They put Derek Johnson out there to try to cover him because, you know, they didn't have anyone else, and he just ran routes right around him and got like 8 yard chunks. Those type of things are so hard to stop in an offense. But when you already have to account for the best receiver in football, that is Antonio Brown, as well as, you know, fast guys like Sammy Coates, it's such a nightmare. Like, how do you prepare for that? And your only hope is to rattle Ben Roethlisberger. But yeah, I agree. If they do bring the house, I think what the Jets are going to try and do, they're going to try and create pressure with that front four. They're going to try and not blitz as many people because they want to account for the Steelers' weapons. And if the Steelers can absorb that pass rush and just pick apart a conservative sort of, defensive scheme, if they keep just rushing the front four, then I think that's where the victory will come. And I also think that in that process, that the Jets, they don't have the guys that can run with Le'Veon Bell. I'm not sure if there is a guy that can run with Le'Veon Bell in the passing game, and I think it's going to be really, really rough for anyone that tries to stop him. So I agree, that's a good key, and that's a good X factor to look at.
Okay, so I agree with both what we both said there. If you were to give a prediction, I'd like to know what your score is and a little bit of background as to why you picked that score.
Okay, my score is going to be around 16 to 38. Steelers, of course.
Okay.
So my thinking on the 16 is they're going to get a touchdown, but they're going to get a lot of field goals. I think that there's going to be drives at towards the end where they get the yards, simply because Ryan Fitzpatrick will try to settle him down. The Jets being, and they're going to try and get him to take what the Steelers present to them. And be a sort of game manager quarterback. And that might lend them some opportunities. But I think that at the end of the day, it's not going to be enough. I think the Steelers' offense is going to – I think they're still confident and they're still hungry because they're pissed about putting up 3 points. And it's funny. you know, people were – the first thing that came out of most people's mouths was, oh, so much for averaging 30 points a game after the Eagles loss when they only scored 3 points. Well, here's the kicker. They just put up a 43-point performance, and now they're averaging 27 points a game. Like, they're right on pace. Yeah. Because, I mean, if you take out that Eagles game, they're averaging well over 30 points a game. So I think that they're still hungry. You heard what Cam Hayward said after the game. That's not even our – you know, that's what we expect, but it's still not our best. Like, you were saying that – they were saying it's not our best performance. Man, let this offense get into gear. They're going to take some shots. If they hit – if Ben Roethlisberger hits on those shots, if Sammy Coates can get behind their secondary, because it's going to cause more and more problems for this for the Jets behind themselves. I think they're going to try. That's when they might try to take those risks, and that's when Ben Roethlisberger can eat them up. I think the offense has a field day, gets up, jumps on them early, and then by halftime, the Jets they'll have like one or two drives that kind of make you question it. But by I'd say like by early fourth quarter, we're all pretty comfortable and getting ready to write up our wrap up stories.
I hope so. I'm going to go with 38-17 Pittsburgh. I think the offense stays red hot. I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't go for a couple 2-point conversions as well. I actually think in the first half this game is going to be close. I mean, thinking back to Philadelphia, that game was a two-score game. I'm sorry, at halftime, and then in the second half it just the wheels fell off. I think the Jets will keep it close in the beginning. I think they might get some timely turnovers in the second half, and I think Pittsburgh wins comfortably 38-17 and really setting up the table for the Miami game on the road and then the comeback for that Patriots game. And I mean, we're going to give you all that coverage. But, you know, Chris, I thank you for your time. You know, we always end on the predictions. I'll give you a second if you want to say anything to Steeler Nation out there, whether it's about the team, whether it's about you and your new gig or whatever, before we call it a night.
Oh, I just want to say just a shout-out to DK Pittsburgh Sports, just thanking them for the opportunity to write for them. It's a really good experience. Again, if you guys haven't checked out, just go there just to check out. I mean, this morning we had six Steelers stories up. Five of them were for our beat writers that go in the locker rooms every day. They get the direct interaction with players. They talk to them. And then, of course, another one was for me, just talking about just breaking down film. Jeff and his guys, the film room crew, you know, those are the guys that I worked with. You know, we were a team back here, and I was proud to say when I left that there was a film room team here at BTSC. So there's great stuff here. But if you want to see the stuff that I've been working on, I mean, I get a lot of liberty with DK Pittsburgh Sports as far as what I talk about every week, and it's some really great stuff. So check it out if you can. I'm just glad to be back on the stand. I'm sad we don't take callers no more because I didn't get to hear me some Vito Manco, man, the living legend himself, or some Bryce from Brooklyn. Dang, I miss those guys.
Well, I'll tell you what, we do a new show called The Steelers Hangover the day after every game. We'll have you on as a special guest, and you'll be able to talk to all those guys again, and most of them still call in regularly, and absolutely. But, Chris, thank you for your time. It was good to talk to you again. I haven't talked to you in a while. Make sure you check out BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. Tomorrow we've got a lot of stuff for you, injury reports, film breakdowns, defensive success against Travis Kelce. Week 4 is going to be our prime article for tomorrow, as well as predictions and everything else leading into Week 5. So with that said, we thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye.